Is that just the mole?
Have you got a mole on your head?
I don't know.
Never noticed.
Seen that before. I think it is jam. It is literally jam. It is jam. We can include this in the podcast. Hello, episode 115 of the Excel podcast discovered that a mole on my head was in fact jam. Now, it just gives you an insight into my toast making process.
How did you manage that?
I don't know. It's quite an achievement. I just had jam and peanut butter. I often have jam and peanut butter. Sometimes I have a banana with it as well.
Mm. In the sandwich?
Well, it's just one slice of toast with... we're now back to... and last week as well, weren't we? We're free of guests, free of pesky guests.
Yep.
Making this podcast interesting. And back to just... You and me, like a crap's last podcast, kind of Samuel Beckett, kind of in an empty void.
Yep. Waiting for Poddo. Oh, you like that?
Well, because I've just been, might be hysterical because I've just, I thought I had a skin cancer and now I don't. Skin cancer turned out to be jam. And the relief is making me hysterical. It's sort of giving me a new interest in life, a new zest for living.
Oh, that's good.
After that reprieve, yeah.
So what are you going to change about your life now? What have you been doing wrong these last few years?
Oh, God, everything. Absolutely everything. Oh, where would you start with that, really? Shall we? Well, this is no good at all, is it, really?
It's good.
Is it entertainment? Is it, you think?
It's relaxing.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a massage for your ear holes.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we should get on to. So what have we got to talk about? My appearance at the Slapstick Festival in Bristol.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday. We've got that.
You had a sold-out crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. It was
How was
good.
It?
It was good. I felt a bit funny looking at the clips, really. It was weird. I don't know if anybody liked me. I was less forthright about my views, really. And it wasn't an issue, really, to be left-wing and to be a major light entertainment star, you know, in the BBC, it didn't seem to matter really.
Yeah.
I think the world is much more contested now, but it's such a good show stuff. You should try and get them to put it on the iPlayer or whatever. I know there's bits floating around on YouTube, but it is so clever and creative and a really brilliant mixture of me and David Rennick and Andrew Marshall.
They choose nice clips? Were you happy with the clips?
Yeah, the
chose?
Clips are fine. Yeah, yeah. I was hoping that the Bishop sketch, which I think is the funniest thing, which is where, because when we, I mean, I said the thing, but David and Andrew used to come to our house every week and we used to sort of combine our work really to make the script. And we had this cat then, Dexter. It was a Tom, an unneutered Tom. Linda had spent time going, he'd walk up to the window and go, do you want to go out? Do you want to go out? And then he'd turn his back and wander off, you know, the way he'd do. And then he'd say, where is he now? He's on top of the bookcase. And so David and Andrew wrote this sketch, but they just changed from a cat, they just changed it to a bishop. So you've got Tony Millen dressed in full kind of bishop rig, being treated as a cat, and me and this, and Jan Ravens played the other woman. And I go, hello, where, do you want to go out? just where is he now? He's on top of the bookcase. Tony was doing it as a bishop. And it's, I just think it's a brilliant sketch, really.
Yeah, that's genius.
And they didn't show that. Yeah, the clips were fine, really. And it was, you know, it was nice. Yeah, I mean, it would be.
Is this the one where you'd have the monologues to camera as you're walking down the street and stuff? Charlie Brooker, that you ripped off Charlie Brooker stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I stole that from Charlie Brooker.
And did you also do that in your other series?
Yeah, I mean, they were all very similar. I just kept changing the name, really, to just kind of get rid of the viewers. I mean, the first three series were written by David Rendick, Andrew Marshall, and me, and directed by Marcus Mortimer, produced and directed. And then second, it was called The All New Alexei Sayle Show, and that was written by me and Graham Lynn and Arthur Matthews, and directed by Metin Hussein and produced by Alan Nixon. And then the final series was called Excel's Merry-Go-Round. I can't remember the name of the producer, but it was directed by Edgar Wright, 22-year-old Edgar Wright.
The whole season was?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. Shows.
Yeah.
I thought he just did an episode.
No, he did all six. But it was written by me and just a lot of writers, Andy Riley, who we mentioned last week, for instance, and other people whose names I can't remember, Dave Cummings. Yeah.
Alexei Sayle's Stuff is a British television comedy sketch show which ran on BBC Two for 18 episodes over three series, from 1988 to 1991. Recurring cast including Angus Deaton, Mark Williams.
Yeah. Father Brown now in on daytime telly.
Oh, right. Okay. Arabella Ware.
Arabella Ware, latterly of the Fast Show.
Oh, is that the My Bum Looks Big in
Does
This
Does My
lady?
Bum Look Big in That Dish Girl? Brilliant. Yeah.
Yes. Tony Millen.
Tony Millen, yep.
Any? Feel free to keep those interruptions coming. Jan Ravens.
Jan Ravens, now of Dead Ringers, of course. Amazing impressionist.
Oh. You say now.
Well, she's still in Dead Ringers.
Are they still doing that show?
Yeah, I think so.
On the radio?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. It was on telly when I was younger. Owen Brenman.
Owen Brenman, yes. He was at 82 in One Foot in the Grave.
Oh, Compo Burst's Dog. Was that the other? No, that was One Foot in the Grave. Nope.
That was our podcast last week.
Yeah, but that was from Last of the Summer Wine, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Harriet Thorpe.
Harriet Thorpe, yes.
Felicity Montague.
Felicity Montague, of course, Alan Partridge's assistant in the classic Alan Partridge and many other things besides.
Lynn,
yeah.
Oh, wow, poor Lynn. And Morwenna Banks.
Morwenna Banks, now a very successful screenwriter and the partner of David Baddiel.
Oh. All a nice team, good people to work with.
Everybody was. It was before Angus was famous. It was just a part of my repertory company before he got Have I Got News for You?
That was the real big one for him, wasn't it? There wasn't.
Yeah.
That was the only reason I knew him growing up myself.
And then, he was also in One Foot in the Grave, though. David Rennick liked him a lot.
The one time I met Angus, I didn't know that you and him had worked together, and I pissed him off.
Did you?
Yeah. I think I mentioned someone that I thought would make him want to chat to me, but it was someone he hated that I didn't know that they had a rivalry. I don't know. I can't remember who it was. Someone I'd worked with or something. And if only I'd known that you knew him, maybe he would have been more friendly to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But me and you weren't so close back then.
Well,
as we have our strong bond now. I'm reading the Wikipedia, by the way. This will fill time. Sketches are interspersed with Sayle's trademark angry stand-up monologues.
Yeah.
delivered from increasingly odd locations. What was the oddest location that you delivered
from? Oh, I can't remember now. We did all kinds of things. I mean, later on, we got even more inventive on the Alexis Sales Show and did. We had a crane, I remember, when we were doing all the new Alexis Sales Show, and the crane essentially has two seats. And I said, I just started doing a monologue. I said, well, I'll put me in the other seat until I do this monologue, just a monologue, and then I just sort of take off. You know, it's never referred to. Wow. I'm just flying through the air, essentially. So we did all kinds of stuff like that, really.
Was the cast, going back to that recurring cast, were you did you build a strong familial bond with everyone? And were you a father figure?
No, not really. I mean,
would you take everyone out for dinner?
No. No. No, I should have done probably, really, but I wasn't. I was too concerned with just the data. Well, I mean, they were all friends. Marcus Mortimer had been location manager and floor manager on the Young One, so I knew him from them. And David and Andrew were friends, so.
Everyone else was just the hired help.
I don't think I was awful, really, but.
I wonder if you ever had a real diva moment and kicked off.
No, I don't think so.
This was your first solo show, right?
Yeah.
That was this must have been, was it a big pressure or did you really enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. No, I loved it, really. I mean, looking at those sketches, the budget is extraordinary. I mean, literally, the budget for one sketch looks like you could get a whole series of a Channel 4 comedy series now out of it, really. Yeah. It's so lavish. I mean, partly because then BBC stuff was still in-house, so it didn't technically cost anything. But also, they just threw a lot of money at it. There was some guy there backstage and said that what they used to do, because comedy was Top of the Pops was also, as I said, in the light end, came out of light end comedy. They just used to steal all the money off Top of the Pops, really. Top of the Pops used to have a massive budget, and then they'd pay for cost overruns on my show just by taking it off Top of the Pops.
It really was a magic. People will never know how fucking good the BBC was.
Yeah.
People will never understand. Even when I worked there, there was still the majority of things were in-house.
Yeah.
And even I, just with my pass, I could go to the hire room, the hire office or whatever, and you could just hire out cameras and sound equipment.
Yeah.
I need this for 3 days. They'd be like, all right, great. And you just walk off with a camera.
Yeah.
But now if they want to make a show, obviously they have to hire a production company and they have to charge for all the equipment and everything. It's just so much waste.
They were often, they would lay off people and then hire them back at twice what it had been costing them already, as freelancers and stuff. And
they'd have actors, a troop of actors on a salary just waiting they'd be like, what gigs are we doing this week? You're doing a radio play here. You're going to be on EastEnders. You're going to go do that. Everything was just so efficient and fucking liberated. And people could just create without this minimal risk because the costs were so easy to get around. It confounds me why they just tore it to shreds.
It's a metaphor for all the insanity of all that privatization, really.
Absolutely.
You could get scene shifters and all that. I remember they were very, I think, was it the pilot of The Young Ones or one of the Paul Jackson shows, Boom Boom or whatever, all the scene shifters going, this is fucking rubbish. And also,
what's a scene shifter?
People who move the scenery around.
Uh-huh.
So they weren't really invested in the artistic.
Yep.
But also, I can remember filming an arena documentary at Ealing, which was then owned by the BBC, and there's the electricians pulling the, you know, they wouldn't go over 6 o'clock. They just yanked the cables out of the sockets, you know.
Wow.
Again, they weren't invested artistically in the, but you could have, you know, but that was still fine, right?
There's pros and cons, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, working class people could get a career in TV, which is so hard to do now.
Yeah.
And it was, there were the unions were stronger, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think there's not John Sullivan, who, you know, wrote Only Fools and Horses and stuff, that he became a scene shifter, I think. And then there was a bar in the BBC club in TV Centre. There was a sort of, there was a bar that was off the side that's now a gym, I think, or this, because it's not big now. But it was the comedy, it was where all the comedy drank. And he sort of got in with them and then pitched them Only Fools and Horses. I don't know. I might be exaggerating that story.
Wow.
But yeah, it was, and it obviously also it trained, you know, all the great makeup artists were trained at the BBC, you know, makeup artists, hair artists, costume designers. They all got, you know, they provided an education and they then went out into movies and out into the world, really. Yeah, and it did provide, it was more diverse. I don't know whether it was more diverse in terms of class or not, really. But, I mean, once you got in there, it did feel like an amazing institution, really. And it is much reduced now. And,
And like Television Centre, it's such an iconic building.
Yeah.
That was designed on a napkin. Drunkenly in a pub.
Really?
Yeah, a guy just drew a question mark on a napkin. He said, there you go, that's your building. And he had to explain it a bit more, and then they were like, yeah, that's a great idea. And so that's why it looks like that. And now it's just all swanky shops and apartments, and it's a Soho club is there. And
yeah, Soho House, yeah.
It's just, that, like you said, it's a metaphor for our fucking
country. Yeah, yeah. And they made so many bad property deals, iron buildings they didn't need or use and stuff like that. But no, it was a golden age, really, you know. Yeah. It was,
I remember I was working at Watchdog and next door was Top Gear and like across the hall was The One Show. You know, everyone was there and everyone was able to cross-pollinate and talk to each other and share ideas and gossip and all that, you know.
It was.
Now it's all just hired production companies. A few places, a few shows obviously still made in-house, but they tend to be like the daytime or talk shows and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The bulk of the content was... Oh, wait, no, I've skipped a bit. Sale is seen traversing the country on a moped. In a vague attempt to catalog and comprehend all the stuff about him. Yeah. So what, is that the main concept of the show?
It was, I mean, we didn't, we don't, you know, yeah, the sort of initial concept was a kind of parody of Jacob Brunowski's, what was it called? Civilization. So it was these kind of very ambitious documentary series that you got in the 80s. So, but it started out as that, but we sort of, you know, we didn't. Right. Particularly stick with that format for long, really.
I know more about Sid Meier's Civilization, but you wouldn't know about that. It's a video game. Okay, the style of humor is often highly surreal and blunt, obviously. Bulk of the content was written by Sale himself with Andrew Marshall and David Rennick.
No, I would say it was...
That's the other way around, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's... I don't know who's written that, but no, it was... I mean, it was a equal third, so I certainly didn't. A lot of the really significant stuff is them, David and Andrew.
All right, let's get our Saleites out there.
Yeah.
On the corrections department to go fix that.
Yeah.
Additional material was contributed by David Stafford.
Yes, my dear friend. Hugh Thomas. I think he's still going. He runs that comedy club in Crouch End at the King's Head. He taught at Middlesex Polytechnic. He just had this great routine about riding a motorbike. And I said, can I buy that off you? And so he said, yeah, right. because he wasn't going to do anything with it.
Really. Oh.
We dropped down a cog, give it a handful, come round the roundabout. I was laughing. She was laughing. It's a brilliant routine about riding the motorbike. I altered it slightly, but it's just this bloke talking about, you know, riding the motorbike. Drop down a cog. I can't remember it now. Dropped it, well, that was the refrain. Drop down a cog, give it a handful, come round the roundabout. His girlfriend's head ends up getting chopped off for some reason. I can't remember why.
Jesus.
I can't remember anything else about it.
Although sales humor in the program covers many bases, politics is always a favorite target. Recently, I had to get married because I got my girlfriend into trouble. Got her involved in the civil war in Angola.
That's not very political.
No, they could have picked a lot better.
Yeah.
There's one where you should say, like, Lib Dems should be shot or something. Beginning of series 2, in a sequence spoofing the creation of Mickey Mouse.
That is brilliant, yeah.
Sketch it's reveals really that dark. Alexis Sale is, in fact, a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Steampoke Fatty.
I've got a cell from that. I should email the woman who did it.
Series 1's titles features a handsome young man. This is, like, just brilliant. The handsome young man arriving to television center to the music, The Wanderer, with prosthetics, makeup, and padding being applied to change his appearance to that of Alexis Sale. When the receptionist then utters, "Who is that fat bastard?"
Moena Banks.
Which was to become the show's catchphrase. Oh, that was... Wait, that was who?
That was Moena Banks.
Moena
Banks. That's the only time she appears, I think.
Oh. Series 3's title sequence is a pastiche of Zorro. I don't think I've seen that.
That's amazing. I mean, it's kind of... I was slightly... It's not quite as clever as the other ones, but it is very extraordinarily lavish.
This fat renegade carves a bee with his blade. A bee that stands
for... bastard.
One episode in series 2 begins with a lengthy cold open. They're picking the most random things to put into.
Well, it was, I mean,
summary.
Yeah.
One episode in series 2 begins with a lengthy cold open of an initially straight scene from Juliet Bravo.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about this because Robin had been through the Wikipedia as well. The announcer says over on BBC Two now, Alexis Sale stuff is beginning. And then whereas over here on BBC One, an episode of Juliet Bravo. And it was so daring. So, I mean, can you imagine the BBC doing that now? So you had BBC Two presenting to BBC One, and for a long time, we got the cast of Juliet Bravo, Anna Carteret.
Wow.
And it just, you think you're in an episode of Juliet Bravo. It only slowly emerges that it turns out that Owen Brenman doesn't know what a woman is. He thinks she's a wigwam, I remember. So Anna Carter had to remote, you know. I mean, it's, I suppose in some ways it's in the spirit of Monty Python, but it was very daring, you know, no laugh track. And, you know, you can imagine the BBC doing that now.
Well, think of how many production companies would have to work together to blend two shows together like that. Was Juliet Bravo, a BBC show, you would have just gone and knocked on their door, go, "Hey, come over." We're gonna...
We used the credits to Juliet Bravo, and it was just...
That's great.
I mean, I loved it when David and Andrew came up with that idea. I just loved it, really. So
I should give that
daring,
show a watch.
You know. I don't know, Right to the BBC, demand it put on iPlayer.
Yeah, man. Go on, everyone. Go on, say lights at home. I'm starting calling them say lights. Fuck it. Right to points of view, which I don't think they do anymore, do they? Maybe it's just on the radio now. It's just a blog.
Well, just write to your MP.
Write to your MP.
Write to the BBC. Demand Alexis Sale stuff and the all new Alexis Sale show on Mega Round are all put on the iPlayer. Of course, all new Alexis Sale show brought us Bobby Chariot as well, mate.
Yeah. Oh, he didn't come till then.
He didn't. No, it was only series four, as it were, that I thought about.
And while you're writing your MP, do mention that the ceasefire is a lie and the genocide continues in Gaza. And we should stop supporting an apartheid state in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And that true anti-Semitism is the murder of thousands and thousands of Semites whose heritage is connected to that land way more than a bunch of Europeans who've taken over that section of the world. Memorable sketches, social workers.
We're sticking with this, are we?
Now, I'm going to skip memorable sketches, but they've got a nice, they highlight a bunch of really good ones. Lord William Rees-Mogg, a few moments with Lord William Rees-Mogg.
Yeah.
It was dad or something?
Yeah, but it was somebody playing him. It was Angus playing him, I think.
Well, certainly, you knew the Rees-Mogg family.
I did.
And yet you were... You were
well. That's the way it was.
Lambasting them here.
Yeah.
Good on you. All right. You did a word association sketch.
No, it was a song I written called "Word Association" with me and a sexy dancer.
It gradually reveals your dirty mind.
Yeah.
But the psychiatrist falls in love with you at the end. Okay. And the Monsieur Aubergine, as discussed on a previous episode.
Yeah.
That made me absolutely piss myself. It came out on... Was it shot on video or was it shot on film?
Stuff was a mixture. Well, it was a mixture of video and film. Okay. I think mostly the stuff on location was shot on 60mm film and then...
Studio
and then
stuff.
We shoot the studio stuff, you know, with pedestal cameras on video.
So multi-cameras.
Yeah.
And then you would have a live audience for that?
We'd have a live audience for the live sketches, and then we'd also play them in and record their laughter of the film sequences.
And you'd show them that on a screen?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that, yeah. Yeah, what did I see where they did that? Oh, I went and saw a live taping of 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps.
All right, yeah, yeah.
And whenever there was an outdoor screen, they'd lower a telly screen. And
Then it would have all been shot off. I mean, it was unsettling, really, because obviously they used to do that on all sitcoms, that they would shoot the interiors in the studio, and obviously with an audience. And then when they went outside, it was... because it was shot on 60mm, the quality was completely different. It was very grainy and, the sound was like all over the place. But people didn't. People just kind of accepted it, really. And because David Renwick was a sort of devotee, he was quite old-fashioned. When they did One Foot in the Grave, he stuck, even though the technology by then allowed you to shoot it all on videotape, he stuck with that... that format of, interiors video and then that exteriors 16mm film.
They released VHS cassettes of the series in the late 80s.
Yes.
In 1990, there was a 79-minute compilation video, The Best of Alexis L. Stuff, released by the BBC. But it wasn't out on DVD until 2005, and then another one in 2006. Oh, this is interesting. Okay. No bonus content on the DVDs.
No, they just saw nothing. Just stuck it out, yeah.
As is common practice, certain sketches were omitted or truncated on the DVD releases.
Oh, really? I've never...
Likely due to music licensing rights or copyright issues. This included the removal of all of the linked Michelin Film Awards sketches from Series 2, Episode 2.
Must make it. I remember it was a Michelin Awards, wasn't it, which was presented by Michelin men. I remember we filmed that at Ealing Town Hall, and it was the hottest day of the year, and all these extras inside these giant foam suits were collapsing.
They were collapsing.
Yeah, with heat, they were so hot.
Well, that's quite extreme. Anyway.
You're
like, get up, come on, we've got to finish up.
Yeah.
Ealing Town. Oh, God, you spent a lot of time in Ealing, man, where I grew up.
Yeah. No, a long time in Ealing Studios, obviously.
All right. That's it was a critical success, apparently. They're saying
it was.
Here.
Won all the awards in the first year. Yeah.
So, why would they not allow it to have more of a legacy and like reissue it and shit, man? Put it out.
Yeah, well, that's not in my gift, but I would like that. Yeah.
Assholes.
Yeah, we won Emmy, Rose and Montre, Broadcast Press Guild.
Emmy Award.
Yeah.
Wait, you won an Emmy?
I did.
Fuck off. Sick. Where is it?
Well, I'll tell that story. I didn't know I was won it until I saw a Channel 4 Breakfast News, which they had then. I saw Benny Hill picking it up. They hadn't told me I was entered for it or anything. They thought they gave it to Benny Hill. We lived in that hall, but lived in a house together. So he picked it up. And then Jim Moyer, then the head of comedy, like entertainment, then just he would get all the awards and then lock them in the cabinet. So I've seen it in Jim's office. I don't know where the hell it is now.
Bloody hell!
But they then went when I was up for a Golden Rose in Montreux. They changed policy and flew me out. And Linda thinks I just annoyed everybody. It would have been better if they hadn't.
Oh yeah, didn't you do something silly on the night?
No, it was I was up. If you won, I won a bronze. I sometimes lied it and pretend I won a gold medal, but it was actually a bronze. If you won the silver, you would then almost automatically get the bronze. And we were having dinner the night before, and there was this guy from Vatican TV. He was an undercover priest, and he said, I'm on the panel and I'm going to make sure you don't win the silver and therefore the gold. And he was like, he was in plain clothes, wasn't it? And I said, why are you going to do that? He said, because of the things you said about the Pope. I'm okay.
Bastard.
So I was done out of my Golden Rose in Montreux by an undercover priest. Yeah. But yeah, Broadcast Press Guild. The only one that didn't win, I've never won, is a BAFTA. But all the other ones, Writers Guilds. Yep. Won them all, man.
Oh, congrats.
It was a big deal, you know. It's weird. I find it really weird, you know, that it was a big deal.
Should we enter
Lee Mack was there, eh? What?
Go on, Lee Mack was what?
At the Slapstick Festival as well. It was nice to see him again.
Ah.
He was talking about not going out, which is in his like 20th series or something.
He is so sweet.
Such a nice man.
He's really fucking sweet. I wish I was here for that episode. But yeah, I bumped into it at one point. He's just the sweetest man. He made a point to come up and say hello. He goes, you're Talal, aren't you? Oh, Alexi's telling me a lot about you, blah, blah. He's just such a sweetheart.
Yes, unusual.
I'm looking at your Wikipedia now. When was the last time you looked at this?
Well, it's well out of date, isn't it? Has anybody put anything up there?
Well, yeah. There's one section called Labour Party.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember that.
Which was in February 2016. Sale said of Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn. Who's that? He's ascetic and morally incorruptible.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The propaganda that's thrown against him is disgraceful. Until he appeared, you had to vote for one kind of Oxbridge twat or another. People who all go to the same dinner parties. People like the Ed Ballses and George Osbornes. Jeremy has shown that within a democratic tradition, other things are possible. It's kind of, they feel like the golden years now.
Yeah. So we felt like something could happen. Well, yeah, so that's all. Yeah. That's all fair enough.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. In 2016, he wrote a comment piece for The Guardian saying that he was happy to mock New Labour in his act, but now Corbyn was about to reform the party in his own image. He would stop making jokes about Labour. Okay.
that itself was a joke.
But then in May 2018, regarding the expulsion of Mark Wadsworth, I don't remember who that is. Sale commented, The party should walk over broken glass to beg people of Mark's caliber to work with them. They are very few, and Mark is one of the best. There is a battle going on to destroy and reverse the unexpected and amazing gains the left has made in the last blah, blah, blah. Mark is a casualty in the battle, and I'm joining the fight to see him reinstated to the front line. Did he ever get reinstated?
Did you fuck? Mark Wadsworth, yeah, he was an anti-racism campaigner. He was one of the sort of central members of the Stephen Lawrence campaign in the early days, really, you know, when they were still confronting massive racism within the Metropolitan Police. And it was that thing that Jeremy and the people around him did where they thought they could throw, they could sacrifice. And then he was involved in, it was a bit, there were Sami Chakrabarty had done a report on anti-Semitism, and there was a launch, and then Mark Wadsworth criticized, he saw Ruth Smith handing a, in cahoots, he thought, with a Daily Telegraph journalist, criticized her. She ran out the room crying, said it was anti-Semitism. Mark didn't know. I mean, it was all, what can I say, really? I think, I don't know whether it was staged or whether it was, I mean, I think they were looking to create some kind of, they were looking in some way or other to detract from Sami Chakrabarty's report. And I guess Mark handed them that opportunity, but it was clearly...
Well, he won his libel case against the Jewish Chronicle.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had to compensate him and apologise.
A very fundamental mistake that Jeremy made, and those, I blame John McDonnell for this partly, was that they sacrificed some people, Ken Livingston, Jackie Walker, Mark Wadsworth, in the hope that that would placate the pro-Israel lobby, the board of deputies. And
right, yeah.
Campaign against them. Of course it didn't. It just encouraged them, really. And they should have stood with. And it was a terrible mistake to do that, really.
They made their mistakes and suffered for it greatly.
Yeah, well, they did. I mean, it's what ruined them, really, that and Brexit.
Okay, last thing here. Okay, involvement with accusations of party anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
January 2020, you were condemned by some Jewish groups after being one of one of thousands to sign an open letter criticizing Rebecca Long Bailey and other Labour leadership candidates for saying they would sign a 10-point pledge intended to combat anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
The letter was organized by
board deputies.
Momentum.
Yeah, no, it was stupid. I mean, Rebecca Long Bailey, Paul Holden's book. I mean, Rebecca Long Bailey was screwed anyway, but she shouldn't have. Again, it's giving in. It's that same appeasement that never works. It's trying to mollify the pro-Israel lobby.
Mm.
And she was stupid. I think the only one who said he wouldn't sign it was Richard Bergen.
Richard Bergen.
Oh. Very good Leeds MP, left-wing MP. Just told them to go fuck themselves, which would have been the correct response.
In May 2021, Conservative MP Matthew Offord.
I know, Desert Island Discs.
Oh, is that what? Oh, yeah. I see that. I wrote to the BBC Director General, urging unsuccessfully that the planned broadcast of Desert Island Discs featuring Alexis Sale on 23rd of May be halted on the basis that every broadcaster should be wary of giving a platform to anyone who is seen to be excusing anti-Semitism.
Fuck you, you cunt.
He's literally Jewish. There was an outcry on social media in response, rejecting the claim that Sale is doing this, with support for Sale from across the board. Yeah. His mother came from an Orthodox Jewish background, it says, and the resulting hashtag... What is it? Say it all together, everybody.
I stand with Alexis Hale.
Very good. Trending on UK Twitter.
Trending on Twitter for 3 days at number one, I think.
And there you have it.
Yeah.
Then it lists all your films and shows and all that shit. Alexis Hale at the National Portrait Gallery.
What the fuck is that?
Sitter in two portraits. Wow. Yeah, you got two portraits in there. They might be in the archive, not on the walls.
They are, yeah.
Wow. That's a nice one, that first one.
Well, I don't know what that is. I've got no idea what that is.
If you go to the bottom of Alexei's Wikipedia, there's some external links there. And
who did the portrait of me?
Oh, I can tell you now. Sorry, I've already clicked on something else. Looking at your records now, your vinyl records. Who did the portraits of you? First one is from 1984. You're standing in a very sultry, seductive manner. You've got a cocked knee, a nice snake-like shape to your body as you hold your arms up behind your head, and the crisscross pattern of the shadows of the window pane.
Is this a photograph?
Yeah. Cast a shadow across your body, and it's a photograph by Alistair Morrison.
Oh, no idea who that is.
The next one is you're dressed as Bobby Chariot, and you're holding you're pushing a tire along.
Right.
And there's a poster of Michelin behind you.
Yeah.
And that's by our friend. The Gizo took the picture of our logo, our podcast logo. Andy Hollingsworth.
Yeah.
It's from 1995. That's a cool picture.
Yeah, I took that in Manchester at my... I was playing Manchester Apollo.
Whoa. Oh, so you'd come out as Bobby in your live shows.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. The what would happen would be that, because you know, Bobby was like a warm-up man. There was like a sequence on slides, and that would break down, and then Bobby would come out. Yeah. I'd do a quick change.
You've got a nice page on the BFI's screen online. Now, what happened with this British Comedy Guide Awards?
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten all about that. Obviously, didn't win it.
Well, did they even announce it yet?
I don't know.
See it announced. I'm just having a quick look here.
Linda was looking at comments. Yeah, she looks at stuff because I don't have to. She said somebody was I was eating all the way through the podcast and that disgusted them and they're never going to listen again. I was eating that croissant, of course, from O Panda Papi.
Yeah.
Lasted me the whole show, but I apologize anyway.
I don't remember it being a nuisance to listen to.
No, maybe the hypersensitive to mastication.
All right. You don't have to watch every episode. It's like the people who don't like the D&D episode who are genuinely angry about it.
Yes. Every day people come up to me and say, please tell me you'll never do that again.
No, they bloody don't. Shut up. No, they bloody don't. I'm reading about Franz Ferdinand and the beginning of World War One. I'm creating a great one for this Halloween. And anyone who doesn't want to listen to it can take a week off, re-listen to a classic ep. Why was I mentioning that? Oh, yeah, no, they haven't announced the British Comedy Awards yet. Okay.
So then with still the chance, waiting. Still a hope.
Yeah.
Still waiting. Ha, ha, ha. I'm still waiting.
So I do get, I don't know what, I think it might be since the Stuart Lee, whenever we have Stuart Lee on, our show's listenership gets a little boost. And it holds up quite, and people still, like, they stick around for a bit after he leaves as well.
We finally get rid of them, but they do stick around for a bit, yeah.
So hello everyone, you know, if you're a new listener, welcome to the family. You know, this is what the podcast is normally like, and
it's not entertaining, but it's an act of solidarity,
and there have been new Patreon members which is really nice to see as well. You know, say we can say hello to like Greg. You know what? You say hello to Greg, Alexei.
Hello, Greg. Welcome to the Alexei Self family as a Patreon member. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. And Andrew and George.
Andrew and George.
Mary.
Also, Mary, thank you. Muchas gracias.
Yeah, yeah.
Por su dinero.
And Nick. Nick upgraded his membership.
Good man, Nick.
No, thanks, you guys. New folks.
Yeah.
Means a lot. Victoria and Daniel. Did we already say them?
No, we didn't. Victoria and Daniel. Lee.
Few people from Norway signed up, weirdly enough. And Andy. Look, it means a great deal. And Mike and Brian and Rebecca. God, more than I realized. Welcome to the fam. You know, we love having you here. And if you want to join them and support the show, what the hell is the website? Can you remember it offhand, Alexi?
Alexi Sale.
Nope.
No, that's wrong, is it? Podcast/.
Nope. What's the website they go to sign up? What's it called? I say it every week.
LexiSalePodcast.com. No.
No, what website is that, though? Where do they go?
I don't know.
Well, no, but I say it every week. They've joined the...
I don't know.
The
podcast. Patreon.
Yes, there we go.
Patreon, yeah.
Okay, so there you go. What's the website?
This is fucking elder abuse.
I know, it's my new hobby.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/
Alexi Sale
podcast. Yes.
Patreon.com/ Alexi Sale podcast.
We'd really love it if you went on there and, you know, for the price of a cup of coffee. Oh, what accent was that? I was trying to do blind boy. For the price of a cup of coffee every month, you know, you can support the show and help keep this, this fucking thing going, if you really, for some reason.
If you think that's a good idea.
Keep us in business.
Yeah. We've got a few live dates, haven't we? We're starting to rope tackle, we're talking about in the...
Yeah, end of July, rope tackle back in Shoreham. Be good to see all you folks again.
August. At the Roundhouse.
At the Roundhouse in Camden. I think it's during the Camden Fringe Festival, but I don't know if Roundhouse is an official venue. I think it's too big to be Fringe.
I don't know.
They're asking us to bring a guest to the Roundhouse. Who would you love to see in a live show, folks? If we were to have a guest. We don't normally like having guests in our live
shows. Why don't we? Because, of course, the all-new Alexi Sale show, we didn't have a repertory company, but instead we would just hire actors. And a beta, friends, or, you know, obviously Peter Capaldi was in it. But also, of course, 2 times Oscar winner Christoph Waltz.
Oh, my God.
Was wanting to see if we could get Christoph on the podcast. God. That would be, I mean, I can't imagine he would do it live. So, but why don't you tease me
with this for years, Alexi.
Well, why don't you reach out to his people?
Me?
Yeah, I'm not fucking doing it.
Can you give me their contact information?
I don't know. He'd be with some United Artists or somewhere. When he'd be with some big American agency.
I'll try. You know, I've achieved certain things on this podcast, so it's not out of the realms of possibility. Yeah. I'll try, but... Christoph Waltz, Oscar winner. Hello, do you remember this guy, Alexi Sale?
We were good friends. It was just...
Yeah, but I'm not asking him. I'm asking some...
Yeah, his people, yeah.
His people. They're going to be like, what are you talking about? A podcast?
You can ask Harrison Ford as well.
Harrison Ford. You said you were a fan of Alexi's. Yeah. And he was very nice to you about that.
Yeah.
But mentioning Capaldi, maybe he'd be a great idea as well.
Yeah.
He's comfortable on stage too.
Yeah.
So, all listeners at home, who would you like to see us live on stage at the Roundhouse?
There's a possibility of us getting.
And on May the 2nd, we're going to be at the Wellingborough Diggers Festival. But head to patreon.com/ Alexi Sale podcast. Chuck us £3, £5, £10, £20 a month. £3 is fine, honestly. And just help the show out. Thank you very much. Now, why did this come up? Stuart Lee. Since we've had Stuart Lee on the show, I've been inundated with emails that seem to be kind of like computer generated or just like copy paste.
Yeah.
Collaboration suggestion, or most commonly, a guest suggestion.
Yeah.
We have this person who's promoting this book, article, TV show, whatever we think would be a great match for your show. And, you know, in my head, I'm like, you've never heard this show, have you? Why do you think this fucking random person no one's ever heard of would be a great match for our show? Interview opportunity. That's what they would say. It's an opportunity. And they always start with, dear the Alexis Sale podcast, which just shows that it's a computer generated message straight away. And then I got one, though, that I couldn't ignore because it was from the team of someone called David Zucker, which is a name I've been familiar with since I was a kid. And this is the guy who made Airplane and Naked Gun. You know, he was like the classic, the guy who made those like one-liner comedy films, you know, that just like joke, 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 joke. And if you don't like one joke, you're already laughing at the next one by the time you realize you don't like the previous joke. And he also famously did Top Secret, which is just being added to Netflix. And that's why, and why we're giving them fucking free promo, because that's why they emailed. They said he wants to promote that it's going on Netflix. The funniest movie ever made. Dear, now that Top Secret is on Netflix and some are calling it the funniest movie ever made. And this one did start with Hi Alexi, not Dear the Alexi Hell podcast. Clever.
That's cunning.
David would love to discuss it on the Alexis Hell podcast, along with any of the other talking points from the press release. And then there's a list of those talking points. Thank you. And then there's a line, and then there's the copy paste kind of press release underneath it. And I'm like, whoa, okay. Would be interesting to talk to this guy. You know, what do you think? So Alexi, I messaged you, said, have you ever heard of David Zucker? And then you called me and you're like, why are you asking me that? And I'm like, well, he wants to do this show. But then while we were chatting on the phone, I just started like casually looking through his IMDb and then found that he worked on an Israeli show called Mossad. And it's like a zany Airplane style sitcom about Mossad. So it's like slapsticky Mossad agents going around, you know, guns slipping out of their hands, slipping on banana peels, that kind of shit. And mid conversation with you, I said, forget it. I've just seen this. We're not having him on. Fuck him. Prick. How can you go and make a joke out of Mossad like that?
Yeah.
And promote, you know, it's all propaganda shit. So he must have gone and spent some time in Israel working on that. There it is, Mossad, 5.6 out of 10. Oh, they're going for like a comedy James Bond style vibe.
Fucking hell.
I'm looking at the trailer. They've got two terrorists on their knees. They're standing behind them with guns and they're having like a awkward conversation. Like they're about to execute these people, but not. It's just not funny, really.
No, I'm sure it isn't.
Johnny English, only better. This is one of the reviews. So yeah, we went off the idea of having David Zucker, but I wanted to ask you your thoughts and memories of those films I mentioned, those ones that, you know, I grew up on, Airplane, Naked Gun.
Yeah,
I like you're a fan of those.
They're funny.
Great. That's been the show, guy.
We've really managed to stretch that out. I thought I was going to have to talk about, you know, this, I mean, it's been quite a week in the news, but let's not bother talking about it, really. We're doing it. Mandelson.
Well, we did a big Mandelson.
Jim Ratcliffe, Ineos Grenadier. The Ineos Grenadier is a shit car, I'll say that.
Free Palestine forever.
Yeah.
And that's not going away.
Yeah, sadly. Should we say, boy, there's a thumbs up appeared in by your head there.
Oh.
I started doing that, is it?
The screen can like sense your gestures and it does stuff. So if I do a peace sign, you get balloons.
Oh, yeah, you get balloons.
And if I do two peace signs, you get some confetti there.
All right.
And I think two thumbs up makes fireworks. There you go. You can turn it off, but I kind of find it funny that it happens accidentally sometimes. Yeah.
As Miranda says in The Tempest, oh brave new world that has such things, int.
I'm taking, oh, you see Riz Ahmed has done Hamlet.
Yes.
Looks interesting.
Yeah, I like him. He's a great actor. And he's very good on Palestine as well.
Yeah, I like him. Yeah. Would you like to have him on the show?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I might have a connection.
Yeah, I said hello to him backstage at that thing at the Troxy last year.
Oh, yeah. And Wuthering Heights is coming out tomorrow on my birthday. And Heathcliff is white as can be. In fact, he's Australian. And he's not meant to be white, right? And there's some controversy.
Yeah, I mean, where'd you start with Wuthering Heights? I mean, I think it's implied. I mean, Wuthering Heights is a very wildly ambitious novel. The first time, really, that we meet the kind of character, the unreliable narrator, because it's initially narrated by the maid whose name I've forgotten. But you're not sure. So you know, but there is certainly an implication that Heathcliff was black or mixed race, anyway.
Yeah.
That's in the book. I think if you look closely at it, though it's never explicitly stated. But Emerald Fennell, isn't it? Who's, I don't know. I just kind of resent for no reason.
What do you mean?
No, she's done some interesting things, Emerald Fennell, but she is obviously very posh and
The director?
She's the writer, isn't she? I don't know, she directed it as well. She did Saltburn, didn't she?
Yeah.
But she's the daughter of Theo Fennell, the celebrity jeweler. I think.
She was asked about this, and she said, well, I can only make the film that I imagined when I was reading the book.
Yeah.
And that's all I can do. And so that means that she's not good at reading then, because she skipped certain words.
Not,
you know?
I ask the readers. I think it's not explicit, but it's implied, I think.
I'm trying to find the word, because there is a word used.
Is it Jacob Elordi who plays?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a very strong actor.
Yeah.
There is a word used in the book, and I'm trying to find it, and it's like an antiquated slur. So it's easy to kind of miss, because you look at the word and go, what does that even fucking mean? Because no one uses it anymore. Where the hell is it? And it's like an old Victorian word for like brown person, basically.
Right.
And I can't find the bloody word. Listeners at home, let me know. I think it begins with an L.
Lascar,
yeah.
Often characters often populated Sherlock Holmes novels. It was often Lascar.
There you go. Lascar is exactly the word. Well done. Mm. Not meant. I would have seen that word and just ignored it, basically.
Yeah,
carried on.
I never
reading.
Quite knew who they were, the Lascars, but yeah.
Well, they were sailors or militiamen from the Indian subcontinent, Southeast Asia, and the Arab world, or British Somaliland. So you know that's quite, and he's called that in the book at one point. So that's quite explicit, isn't it?
If he's actually referred to as a Lascar.
And so, you know, this is the kind of culture that you propagated in your acting career, Alexei, where we whitewash brown characters. Sorry to put that on you. I love you so much. I'm just kidding. Yeah, he's explicitly called a Lascar in the book.
Really?
His mysterious origins in Liverpool suggest he may be of mixed race or South Asian descent. So I was quite looking forward to the film. I haven't seen it yet. Charlie XCX is doing the soundtrack. That's all quite exciting. I like the song she did with the guy from Velvet Underground. Can't remember his name, not Lou Reed.
John Cale.
Yes. She did a song with him, and it's really... really cool. But let's see.
Let's reserve our judgments.
I'm just sick of whitewashing, man. Come on, it is annoying. I'm going to get some pushback on that. Whoever that commenter is who's like, you always talk about being Arab, Talal. I was like, well, what? Stop making me think about it then. All right. Love you, Alexi. We were going to take this week off, but we are not. We're taking next week off, though, most likely.
Okay.
Yeah, likely. I'm away, I think. I'm going to Brighton. It's going to be hard to fit it all in.
All right. Some people may feel like we took this week off. All right. Bye bye.
You've been listening to the Alexi Sale podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexiselpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.